Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 205, Tom. 205. This is getting to the point where we start to forget the numbers again. Like 200, what a milestone. 205, starting to forget we're up to.
Wake me up when we hit 225.
Okay, great. Have you got a joke for that?
No.
Okay, just wondering if like it was a line from a song or...
No.
Wake me up when September comes. Or is that the...
Apparently he fucking hates that song now. Fair enough.
It wasn't their strongest.
It's really not. But no. He just said every year people slam him with memes.
But how would you have known back then that memes were going to be a thing that you were going to be haunted with for the rest of your life? It's like not having an idea of what irony is, writing a song about it when you're like 19 and then you're in your mid-40s and you have people going, you know, ironic is not actually ironic. Oh, no, I didn't know that.
How coincidental.
Exactly. Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. This edition is brought to you by Water Cooler Conversations. Much like being on social media, in order to get the most out of a water cooler convo, you must have watched all the movies and TV shows and have an opinion about everything. Here's to being a know-it-all. There's been a lot of talk around the traps that our town's greatest bathroom tiler of all time is planning to move to Readersville. Seeing we are the source of local information, we put on our investigational reporter hats, you know, the ones that say press on the side, and made it our mission to find out the truth. Unfortunately, Simon Pavers is moving out of Watchersville for good. When asked why, he said,
"There's no hard feelings, but I've been here a long time and I feel like a page change."
Of course, this means the moment he and his possessions cross the county line, he will be classified a mortal enemy of our town. It's just the way it is. It's been this way ever since the Great Watching-Reading War of 1799. If anyone knows of another Tyler, tell them we're looking for one. Penelope Penn has become second runner-up at the International Whistling Competition. Her rendition of Guns N' Roses' Patience was good, but not as good as first runner-ups Moon River and the winner's version of Benny Hill's theme song. Well done, Penelope. You've made us proud. Ish. If anyone is interested in taking part in the Letterbox Drop World Record next month, give Gary a call and he'll make sure he pops some pamphlets on your front porch. Of course, the whole town wishes for better weather this year. It was such a shame that gale force winds snuck up and ruined the last record attempt. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville. Tom.
Yes.
I did a bit of research for the quiz today. Got a quiz for you.
Huzzah.
Bit of research.
I like that. I did the smallest amount of research for my fun fact of any fun fact I've presented thus far, including the one that was just straight off the top of the dome. I looked for good trivia for this one. Turns out there wasn't tons. Found two bits that might make you go, huh.
That's what trivia has to do.
That's all it has to do.
It just has to go, huh.
Huh, got some news.
Oh, I've got news as well, and I guarantee you we both have one of our stories are exactly the same. Should we guess?
Okay, and I've got a news story as well.
Okay.
From Halloween. Oh. I don't think in any multiversal confluence of you and I existing,
yes,
you would ever guess the sentence of the best thing that happened on Halloween for me.
Will I be guessing?
Oh, well, I'll give you a shot. You won't get it.
Okay. I'll give clues as to the story that I think both of us have, and then you give some clues as to what the same story. Lasagna cat.
Oh, yeah, I know the story. I didn't even write it down because I was like, this is just going to – does Leah just want me to be angry on air?
I commented on Twitter on some tweet about this, Chris Pratt playing Garfield in a new animated movie. I was like, oh, so he is now the go-to voiceover guy for all animated things?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Why is he infesting our childhood?
It's so funny because that Mario news, I remember thinking,
How's that going to work? How is it going to work?
Like, he's great in the Lego movie.
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's awesome as Emmett.
But he's not Mario.
He's not Mario. And he doesn't do a voice. He does his voice.
Yep.
I can't think of anything where he's done a voice. There's a bit in Parks and Recreation where he attempts to do an English accent and it comes out Australian.
Which is impressive.
It's very funny.
I also don't know how he's going to go with... Because Garfield is very cynical and sarcastic.
See, Ryan Reynolds is even too hyperactive.
You need Ryan, but like squash him.
Like I always thought Dylan Moran. He would be a fantastic Garfield because he hates everything.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good one.
Bill Murray was a great pick.
Bill Murray, perfect. You know,
I wouldn't say perfect.
I even think Aubrey Plaza would be good.
Oh, that's a good call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the kind
I'd also throw in Stephen Wright.
Oh. Why
is Stephen Wright not
Garfield?
Why is
that not? That's who you need.
I solved it. Here we go.
Yeah. So he will be not Stephen, unfortunately. Chris Pratt will be Garfield in a new film.
All right. Well, I'm going to grab the wheel and steer us away from that.
Thank you.
But keep it Garfield adjacent.
Cool.
Bill Murray.
Yes.
Did an interview with some Germans the other day and lets it slip some information that is either a bit of a spoiler or he's fucking with German newspapers, which is entirely possible Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Bill Murray basically just announced that he's going to be involved in Ant-Man 3 or Ant-Man and the Wasp 2, depending on how you'd like to look at it. Because we already had Ant-Man and then Ant-Man and the Wasp, and this one's going to be the third one. So is it Ant-Man 3 or is it Ant-Man and the Wasp 2? You decide.
I don't want to be the person that decides.
It's called Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Okay, great.
Which is great because they use the word quantum a lot, and in their reality, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just gobbledygook science.
Stuff we don't understand.
So Bill Murray was basically like, I recently got the opportunity to do do a Marvel movie. I didn't think I ever would, and I've done it now. I don't think I will again, but I love the director. I've long wanted to work with this director because he did a fantastic job with this cheerleading film from almost 20 years ago called Bring It On.
Maybe you may know it.
And that's as much as he got to. Bring It On was directed by Peyton Reed, who ended up directing Ant-Man and Ant-Man 2 after Edgar Wright left.
Yep.
And he's done some awesome funny comedies and a lot of good TV work and stuff. But, yeah, his big hits have been Bring It On and Ant-Man. So it's hilarious that, Bill Murray put his hand up to be in Ant-Man 3 because he wanted to work with the guy who made Bring It On.
And not obviously the piles of money that anything related to Marvel will give an actor.
Well, it's going to be interesting. There are a few people that I like just off the top of my dome that I think he could do. I think they could do some very cool de-aging technology on him the same way they do with Michael Douglas and have him back in the 60s.
Kurt Russell as well.
Kurt Russell's been done, Robert Downey Jr., all this sort of stuff. I could also see him – so Ant-Man 3 is going to deal a lot with Kang the Conqueror, who is a variant of He Who Remains, the guy that was at the very end of Loki.
Yep.
Who was dispatched. And he's like, there's a worse version of me coming. You wait and see.
Yeah.
So he's going to be the main bad guy for Ant-Man 3. And I'm assuming plenty more Marvel films after that. I think he's being set up to be the next Thanos. I think – that Bill Murray could play God, play the being who created all. So there's He Who Remains, and you could have Bill Murray as like He Who Was.
So the Morgan Freeman of the Marvel world.
Yeah. And what I want more than anything.
what?
Is for Paul Rudd to meet God and ask for directions. Or some shit that doesn't matter and doesn't help anything, and they move, and that's the cameo. He meets God in the quantum realm, shrunk down tiny. He's the guy who exists everything, and he asks, "How the fuck do I get out?" Not any great question or anything
Second
like that.
Second corner away. From the left, just make sure there's a coffee machine. Yeah, that would be very funny.
The other idea I had, and this is a lot more out there, but so Bill Murray is Phil. From Groundhog Day, who's essentially an immortal being.
True.
And Ant-Man's already had a time heist in Endgame, and he's shrunk himself and looped and weird things. Why can't Bill Murray play Phil again, and maybe, so the Spider-Man Sony Marvel deal is about to end. Groundhog Day was made by Paramount. Paramount's now owned by Sony. What if Marvel were total ballers and went in and went, we want to do more Spider-Man. We also want to use Phil from Groundhog Day, if that's cool.
Sony be like, or okay.
Sure. Why not? Do you want Stephen Tobolowsky to pop in as well?
Yes, of course
Ned,
we do.
Ned Ryerson. I think that could be a lot of fun.
It'll be a doozy.
So that'll never happen, but it's fun to think about things like that.
I really like that idea. Can you imagine how on board so many people in the world would be?
Awesome. Imagine if Ant-Man had to go to Phil for advice on getting out of a loop.
Would you get Andie MacDowell?
She's looking good.
Yeah. Mm. She's got great hair still.
And the bod.
Well, I don't know, because Groundhog Day, she spends a lot of time cold because it's still cold.
But I don't know. She's always been a foxy lady.
Yeah, right.
Got a lot of time for the MacDowell.
She's got a great accent too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
She's who I would want to be my super nanny.
As in...
As in, like, if you were to have a stern British woman come and tell you how to fix your life...
You want the Texas version.
I want Andie MacDowell.
Yeah, right, okay. Do you know,
that's what I'm saying, the super nanny of...
I get you.
I'd listen
time
to
out,
her.
Sit on the steps.
Yep.
For the 1 minute for every year you've been alive, right? That was her rule?
Yes.
So 5 minutes for... Yeah, okay, great.
Follow The Watchers on Twitter at TheWatchersPod1.
Where do we go with that? That was Marvel. Okay.
I'm not done with Marvel, but that's all right.
Oh, well, I can segue to Disney Plus and then you can segue back out to Marvel if you like. So as we know, they're going to make Hocus Pocus 2.
Mm.
That'll be out, I think, around Halloween next year, 2022. So they announced, Disney, I should say, announced that not only will they have, you know, the cast of Hocus Pocus, but few extra people. Hannah Waddingham. Now, people may know her from Ted Lasso. I know her from Game of Thrones. She was Shame.
Sure.
Shame with the bell. She's going to be in it. And also Tony Hale.
Yes.
Is going to be in it as well, which is pretty cool.
And I saw Sam Richardson in the mix. I'm always happy to see him appear.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be a brilliant film for Halloween next year. I think if we're already getting news now about it, they're going to trickle more and more. I think this is just like the tip of the iceberg. I think this one's going to just be cameo central.
Well, see, I'm hoping that this might start a bit of a trend for Disney Plus. Of Disney, the last couple of years have loved doing their live action remakes. How about instead we now dig deeper into the Disney catalog, Disney library, and get some sequels to stuff that people never thought would happen, rather than just rehashing the same story. If people are keen to come back, do it smaller scale, less budget, all this sort of stuff, Disney Plus.
Because there were some interesting ones in there. Because we spoke about him before, but Kurt Russell, wasn't he like a child star who did a few Disney things?
Very much
so. Back in the day, Jodie Foster.
Yeah, like Walt Disney spent part of his time on his deathbed talking about how Kurt Russell was going to be the future of cinema.
Sort of.
He was. He was a big deal. He was, but like Walt Disney was like, that's the Disney star. That's the kid. You work with him.
The brilliant part of that is, right, not only did he go on to do stuff, and he has been in another Disney thing, which was, you know, Marvel.
Yeah.
But you've also got his son in the mix now as well.
Yep. Good on you, Wyatt.
Walt, no. Knew.
He knew.
Gosh, he's clever.
What a clever chap.
All right, I just segued it into Marvel for you.
That's all right. Thank you very much. So there's a whole bunch of rumors going around that some plot leaks and stuff for 2022. I'm not going to go into all of them because a lot of them weren't substantiated fully by sources that I completely trust.
Okay.
So I don't want to talk about them on record. But it sounds like the Moon Knight show with Oscar Isaac is going to have some pretty crazy supernatural stuff.
Can you remind me what the Moon Knight – like the backstory, like
sure.
Just a bit of a synopsis.
Moon Knight was he is an American mercenary.
Yep.
He is killed in Egypt, Khonshu, who is the god of the dead,
mm-hmm.
bird faced death god, comes to him and says, if you will be my avatar on Earth, I will raise you up again.
Cool.
So he's brought back to life. Unfortunately, he has multiple personality disorder, split, you know, like completely split personalities and this sort of stuff. And it's never been played for as a joke, but there have been times where it's been much more serious and been an issue than others when he can conquer. But it essentially means that he's got Mark Spector, which is his day-to-day personality. There's Jake, who is a very well-connected taxi driver who finds out the info on the streets from people. Then there's, I've forgotten his name, but another personality runs a film studio and it, like, is a big name actor. Think Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, right.
And then the fourth personality is the Moon Knight, which is Batman, but completely in white. Drives, flies a moon, a crescent moon shaped ship.
I do too. That's so weird.
He's all about, I wear white because I want people to see me coming and feel terror.
Sure. Oh, so he's like a bad guy?
No.
Or he wants the bad guys to feel terror.
Yes.
Right.
So imagine a Batman who doesn't operate from fear, operates from terror, wants to go to the next set. He mutilates people and leaves them. Like, he does kill. But if he doesn't kill, he's going to leave them far worse off than Batman would.
Wow. Okay. This is like a massive mix of things going on. I'm getting massive United States of Tara vibes with Toni Collette. I'm getting even sort of a bit like Orphan Black.
Yes, there's very, very Orphan Black in the mix. So there've been different iterations. There was one iteration where his personalities got dumped from his mind, and it was only for 12 issues, and we didn't really know what happened. But instead,
who was he at that during that part? Was he just his?
That was the brilliant thing.
Oh, okay.
So he was Moon Knight and Moon Knight and Moon Knight, but the second Moon Knight was Spider-Man, the third Moon Knight was Wolverine, and the fourth was Captain America. So he had Captain America always telling him the right thing to do. He had Spider-Man telling him to lighten up, and he had Wolverine telling him to kill. And so all three personalities would play out in his mind, but then also take over the psyche in what was needed in the situation. So it's a really, really, really clever character.
This character's
interesting. Ethan Hawke is going to be the bad guy in this.
Nice.
It's not confirmed, but part of these rumors is that he's actually Dracula, which is going to be setting up Dracula, going to be setting up another big bad to appear in plenty of the Marvel TV shows and movies moving forward. You've got, because vampires are a serious issue, and if you've got vampires, well, you know who that means is coming. Blade, which we already know there's a Blade movie coming.
Of course.
So that's all being set up
there.
Yeah,
right.
All very cool. She-Hulk, there's plenty of stuff moving there as well. Again, unsubstantiated, so I'm not going to dwell on that too much, but it looks like we're getting more villains and things to fill out that world. Charlie Cox is expected to appear as Daredevil again from the Netflix series.
There's been so much talk about this the past few months.
He's likely to be a variant, Loki style.
Oh, that's cool.
So, the Netflix stuff existed, but it isn't full canon anymore. That's the first actual acknowledgement we've had of
this. That's a bit better. I prefer that. And obviously, they're able to do that because variant is a thing in the Marvel Universe. But that's better than when Disney got Star Wars and went, all of that over there, that's correct, not canon, that doesn't count.
Correct. So scrap
this is way better.
But the one I wanted to talk about, and this is, again, unconfirmed or anything, but I think it's pretty cool. Mm. In the past, I've talked a lot about MODOK, the mental organism designed only for killing. He's a giant floating head. Well, he's a head that's stuck in this tiny robot body, and he's got spindly little arms and legs that dangle off the body.
You watched an animated series.
It was
on the Star part of.
Yes, so a stop motion series.
Patton. That's right.
Yeah, and that's Seth Green's stupid monkey company.
Okay, right. Yep, makes sense.
So that was great. Well, we've been longing for him to appear in the Marvel Universe proper, because MODOK is this incredibly blank slate character. He can be very, very funny. He can be terrifying. You can play it as a David Lynch style body horror. Look at this guy stuck there. Whatever. For a long time, I thought Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, because he's surly. Like, I remember him from Elf, and he was just that wonderfully surly character.
But then he got cast as the giant dwarf in Infinity War.
Oh, that's right.
So they've used him.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
So the name that's come up now, apparently Marvel are ready to push the button, pull the trigger and bring MODOK into the MCU proper. And they want to use him across several of the Disney Plus shows, even the movies as well, maybe. Jim Carrey. if you're going to have a giant expressive face in a robot suit, go to the top.
Yeah, you might as well. And also, someone with that kind of star power,
people
are going to follow him from series to series to movie,
yep,
back to series.
And he makes perfect sense because he's not someone you picture as a superhero. I can't I can go pretty far down the list, and like for DC, he'd make a great ambush bug who is.
But he was already the Riddler.
That's it. So he's been Riddler. He works as a villain.
Yeah.
He's great as a villain because villains are
crazy. It's crazy.
And they're skinny and spindly and they're all expressive with the arms and they're big.
Mm.
And that's what he's perfect as. So put him in something where he loses access to the arms and legs and he's just got the face, but it's a face as big as a dinner table. I'm so into this.
That's a great casting idea. I hope they do it.
Rumors, that they expected that he may debut in She-Hulk.
Wait, when is She-Hulk?
Next year.
Okay, so we've still got ages.
A little bit of time. There's filming and everything like that.
Yeah, right.
He will have a role in Ant-Man 3 as well.
Okay.
Which may end up being a lot of people in Ant-Man 3. It may be a lot bigger importance than we first expected.
Gosh, that's a lot. That's a lot of Marvel stuff.
It was. And all I wrote down was Jim Carrey and MODOK. Rest of it, I just remembered.
That was great.
For a visual representation of this audio, check out the Watchers podcast on Instagram.
I'm not going to talk about Marvel or Disney right now.
Fair. I'm done with it. Let's move away from Marvel.
I'm going to talk about Gordon Ramsay because he does a lot of cooking stuff, a lot of cooking shows. Of course, Hell's Kitchen, everyone's favorite Nightmare Kitchen. That's like the best one. He even did like the, do you remember the travel one on, I think it was Nat Geo or something?
Sure. He's too cranky for me.
But he's not cranky when he does his one with his family, does that cooking show with his family.
Yeah, sure.
And he's not. He's like a little bit embarrassed.
Sure. Because he's the same on Instagram. I like him on Instagram. Mm. I just don't like him in the contrived anger.
Yeah, they're like, please smash that bit of salmon fillet with your fist. Why? Just do it. Okay. Anyway, he's got this new cooking show called Next Level Chef, and it's got this really cool concept to it. So I believe it's going to be three teams, right? And depending on how they go each week, they'll be on a different level. So there are three kitchens for the three teams. Level one, right up the top, has got caviar, you know, the finest, you know, as much truffle ingredients. And they can cook whatever
Morel
they want.
Morel mushroom.
That's right. Oui, oui. They can have all of that stuff to cook with, the finest of the finest ingredients. Level down, kind of like your standard stuff.
Yep.
Stuff that you would find in, I don't know, MasterChef cooking show. That, sure. You know, like good stuff.
Things from the organic section at Woolworths.
That's right. Yeah, macro. And then the level below, that's where you start to get stuff that chefs hate. So you probably have like your processed cheese. If you want cream, it's probably in a can. You know, that kind of stuff. Like you can only cook with Kraft Singles. That kind of thing, right?
Pre-dried pineapple.
He's so angry.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So depending on how they go the week before, they're going to switch around those kitchens and work in the different levels. So whilst they are working as teams, they will whittle down to the final three people, contestants, and one winner will go away with $250,000. I like the concept. I think this is going to be fun. I think there's going to be a lot of stressed out cooks and chefs, and I think that's going to make for hilarious television.
I do enjoy that. You know, I love guys' grocery games and it's that same kind of thing.
Like
taking chefs out of their comfort zone.
Gordon can't be too serious on this one because the whole concept is...
What the fuck are you doing?
Exactly. Sure. Have you got any other news stories?
I do. I've got two brief ones and a trailer.
Yeah, I got one more too.
All right, so I'll give you my one that you'd never guess about the best thing that happened on Halloween.
Yeah.
You never guess.
Okay.
Do you want to have a try?
Martin Short doing an impersonation of Jim Carrey, doing an impersonation of Morgan Freeman, doing an impersonation of Shelley Long in Troop Beverly Hills.
No, but...
Close?
Very specific guess. Well done. No. Limp Bizkit dropped a surprise album.
Okay, that I was a little off.
Just a little bit off. They dropped their new album called, it's called Still Sucks. So the front cover says Limp Bizkit Still Sucks. It's their first new album since 2011, their first release since, I think, 2014. Been a long time between drinks.
I did see Fred Durst recently. They did a concert and they were like, hey, this is what Fred Durst looks like now. And I was like, whoa.
Yep.
I would walk past him and not know.
Yep. So it turns out that that's a whole thing. And there's a song on the new album called Dad Vibes. And it's all about how the people that grew up listening to Limp Bizkit and were angry, they're all in their late 30s, early 40s now. They don't have things to be angry about. So instead he makes a groovy jam about rocking down with your dad boy. And it's perfect. And I thought, like, so that last album, Gold Cobra.
Is this the 2011?
Yeah, it was fucking, it was trash. It was so bad.
Were they still trying to be who they were? Yeah.
And at some point since then, they've just decided to become the most troll band ever. And the whole thing is just trolling. And it's like, if you don't get it, you don't fucking get it. We're not serious about this. I don't want to fight people. Do you know what, like, it's just that, like, come on, man, we're musicians, we're making stuff, it's fun. If you don't get the joke, don't listen and step away and stuff. So.
Because Limp Bizkit were terribly serious back in the day.
Yes.
Like, they were the, we're the bad guys, not bad guys, but we're, like, tough guys. We're Do not mess with us. Look at how cool my Flavor Saver is. I got my cap back.
They were Pearl Jam to Korn's Nirvana.
Yep.
Of the new metal
That's
scene.
Nice. I like that.
In that they were far more, they were angrier and they were ready to fight at the drop of a hat and stuff like that. And now Fred Durst is like, let's just be funny.
Hasn't he gone away and done something completely different?
Yeah, he's a director.
That's right. I knew it was nothing to do with music.
Yeah, he went and made a bunch of indie movies. Some of them are not bad.
Yeah, right.
I'm not, I haven't seen any that's like, fuck, you got to watch this movie. It's great. But it's cool that he's doing other stuff. And, yeah, it's nothing to do with watching. I just thought people need to know that Limp Bizkit put out a new album and there's some straight bangers on there.
Well, if I can go with the segue vibe that we've got this episode. Speaking of blasts from the past, Andrew McCarthy was in heaps of stuff in the 80s, right? He was in things like Pretty in Pink, St. Elmo's Fire, Weekend at Bernie's, Mannequin. He was part of the Brat Pack, right? From the 80s, anyway, he wrote a memoir, I think it was last year, called Brat, an 80s Story, and it's getting made into a doco. And the doco sounds kind of cool because it's going to have him traveling, I assume, around America, catching up with the other people who were in the Brat Pack and asking them, or having a conversation at least with them, about what it was like to be part of that group.
Sure.
And how it has changed them and how they are today, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I'm just thinking about the people he's going to be talking
to. Mickey Rourke.
It's got to also be Rob Lowe, right?
Slater. Like Christian Slater.
Christian Slater. What about people like Ali Sheedy?
Sheedy might be there. Sean Astin might get a look in.
Would Demi Moore get one?
Ooh.
Molly Ringwald, potentially? So, yeah, a whole heap of cool actors. And I like those sort of...
Oh, and Kiefer.
Of course.
Kiefer would be in that mix
Lost
for sure.
Boys and... Was Kiefer in Flatliners?
Yeah. I think so. Oh,
Well, we were angry about that.
We were angry about
so
that.
So we may not have
No, I'm trying to remember. There's a movie with all the Brat Pack in the diner. They all just sat around a table. Kevin Dillon will be there.
Oh, Kevin Dillon. That's a name I haven't thought about for years. I think maybe the Coreys were a bit too young for Brat Pack, right?
Yeah, Coreys too, yep.
Yeah, so I'm really
– cool.
I'm going to have to – I'm going to keep my eye on this one so that when it comes out I can watch it and report back. I mean, I haven't even started, so it's early days. I'm expecting sometime next year probably.
Sure. Also looking at stuff that's going to be in the far future, but I'm still amped. Just before we started recording, Boondock Saints 3 is confirmed to be happening. Now, this may mean nothing to you.
I'm like, I know the name, or am I just thinking about Utah Saints?
So Boondock Saints is from, I want to say 1999. I think somewhere back there. It's one of, if not the first Norman Reedus big role. It's him and Sean Patrick Flannery, and they play two brothers in Boston who accidentally kill two Russian mobsters and decide that they're going to rid Chicago of crime. And it's great. Billy Connolly is in the mix. I won't tell you who he plays. Oh, he plays as like the worst mob hitman.
I have to watch possible. This. I do remember it was a thing.
He wears a fancy vest that has, I think, 6 handguns, so he can pull and constantly shoot out.
Billy?
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Willem Dafoe is the police detective hunting them.
Did he do the face? Did he do the smile?
There's a bit of smile, but...
Oh, it's creepy.
It's one of my favourite Willem Dafoe performances.
Yeah, right.
He goes to places you do not expect. The role is... Everyone in this film is going through a metamorphosis. They're changing who they are. They're being impacted by these vigilantes and realizing that maybe they too could be more true to themselves.
Mm.
Willem Dafoe embodies that really well. Anyway, so the first one was back then.
Yeah.
And it was the director and writer and creator and everything, Troy Duffy. He was a barman and he got sick of action movies that he thought were shit. So he wrote a script for one.
Smart mind.
And then shopped it around and Harvey Weinstein loved it.
I mean, that's awkward, but what a great thing for Mr. Duffy.
Well, the deal he made with Harvey was I have complete creative control and you buy the bar and give it to me. I don't want to just be the chump that pours the drinks. I want to run the bar. So anyway, there's all sorts of stories and I don't want to get into too much of it because he still sues people over libel and things with this, but he reportedly put about half the budget of the film up his nose.
Okay.
And it went off the rails. The film is still amazing. And it was due to come out in cinemas the week after Columbine shootings happening.
Oh,
and the
man.
Two main heroes in this film are trench-coated
guys
carrying around shotguns.
Yeah, right.
So it came out at a poor time.
Mm.
But it was a huge success on VHS and DVD. And it's grown and grown and grown. And then I want to say late 2000s, maybe early 2010s, they got to come back and do Boondock Saints 2.
Like, including Mr. Duffy himself?
Yes, everyone back together. And they've been talking since that time of how they'd love to do number 3. Number 2 ended up with the two brothers behind bars. They're in jail.
So they may still be there.
Well, they're going to still be there, but if they get out, how is the world going to change? Has crime crept back in? Have they inspired other vigilantes?
Ooh.
What will the angle be? I don't know. But Norman Reedus, Sean Patrick Flannery, they're all involved again. Reedus is excited. This character is
because he's not Daryl. He'll be able to do a normal voice, right?
Do an Irish American accent.
What's that, like a Boston accent?
It's a bit
Boston-y?
Yeah.
I mean, at least he gets to say more than
he talks quite a bit, and he's the more soft spoken, well thought. Level-headed of the two. It's funny to see him as Daryl being so quiet and taciturn and reserved when I've known him as this, where he's a lot more
chatty.
This fucking guy with his fucking rope. Well, you got so much fucking rope. It's that sort of accent.
Okay. I'm excited to see if he will allow them to cut his hair.
Yeah.
Because he won't be Daryl by then, right?
He has a very short, rough hairstyle.
Can he have that same one?
Yeah.
Or at least a lighter colour, because his hair has gotten very dark.
No, they were all pitch black.
Okay, so he will be dark then.
Pitch black, close-cropped hair.
So
trailer.
Why not?
Would you like a trailer?
I would love one.
That's me parking the trailer so we can watch a trailer.
Okay.
Saw last night the trailer for The Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, okay. Please tell me all about this because I saw the still from it and I was like, I'll watch it later. And I didn't.
I think they've only gone and made a Godfather.
Is that because set in Jabba the Hutt's place, like he's taken over Jabba the Hutt's thing? Is that what it kind of is?
There's a dinner table there.
Right.
And he's got all these aliens around there and they look like other rival mob bosses or something and they're coming to pay respect or whatever and someone talks back. And the comment is made, if you talked back to Jabba like that, he'd have had you killed. I'm here to listen. I'm not here to lead through fear. I'm here to lead through respect. But as he says that, he leans back in the seat and Fennec Shard who's Ming Na Wen, standing behind him, like ready to fuck him up. So he's still leading through fear, but it's got this quiet glacial menace that's flowing through this trailer. Mm. Instead of him shooting people up all the time, there is some fights with him, but it's kind of more him surveying fights and like directing.
Yes.
That's why I say Godfather
he's
vibes.
He's a puppet. He's a puppeteer, sorry.
He's pulling some strings.
Yeah, now. Right. Which, I mean, was the Godfather logo, yep. wasn't it? That sounds interesting and really, that sounds very different to other Star Wars series.
Yep.
And I think I like that about what they're doing, what Disney Plus are doing with Star Wars.
Try something different. We've seen the same thing from them so many times. These last three films are just the same fucking thing over and over and over. So it's great.
Yeah.
Trying a different angle.
Mm, now it makes me even more interested for the Diego Luna one. And I am, but I'm not excited about Obi-Wan. I think because it's a more of a known.
Sure. I'm still going to dig it.
Oh, 100%.
I like
watch
Hayden
it.
Christensen.
I like Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. There'll be some good fun stuff.
Yeah. This is very exciting because when was it? I rewatched the second season of Mandalorian earlier this year. It was before our big lockdown, so maybe May, something like that. And that last bit, I was like, oh, that's right. We've got Boba Fett.
Yeah.
We've got that coming up. Very exciting. I might have to watch the trailer actually once we finish this because I wouldn't mind getting my eyes across it.
I think you should. I think you should. Whoa, what's that? Sorry, I've just had a loose fun fact run across my
Jeez,
toes.
Jeez, are you okay? Yeah, like you've got this.
Oh, I grabbed it. I've got it by the scruff of the neck. Oh. Broken its neck. I'm going to crack it open like a bloody fortune cookie. And here's the fun That's a fun fact.
It's not as messy as I thought it was going to be. I thought it would be gorier, but it wasn't.
We've worked out well. So this fun fact is from Bring It On, because we were talking about Peyton Reed and Bring It On earlier.
Yeah.
That's not a great fun fact, but it's a fun fact nonetheless.
I'm ready to go, huh, and that's all I want.
Here you go, two times. The film's top two billed actresses are Kirsten Dunst and Elijah Dushku, right?
Right.
So Kirsten Dunst found fame involving vampires.
Yes.
Interview with the Vampire.
Yes.
Eliza Dushku found fame being a vampire slayer on Buffy, taking care of them. She was also in True Lies, but we're not talking about that. She's much younger. But yeah, that's a fun fact. Vampires really sinking their teeth into the cheerleading world. It's a thing we know.
Cheerleading vampires is what Buffy was all about, at least the movie, remember?
Yep. But Bring It On only had a budget of $10 million. $10 million. That's tiny compared to things made today.
It would have made way more than that. It would have made heaps more.
Oh, yes. The biggest expense of the entire film was securing the right to Warren's cherry pie, which cost $40,000.
She's my cherry pie.
We don't have $40,000, so don't sing that song.
$40,000 in what year was that? About 2001. 2001, $40,000.
I know that for a fact because it came out the week I finished high school and I saw it 4 days in a row.
Now that's a fun fact.
That's a fun fact. A lot of Slurpees were drunk that week. Believe me, friends.
Yeah. That was two for one.
There you go, two for.
We're lucky.
Easy peasy fun facts. And it all took was one small dead marsupial.
Yep. It was my.
I feel bad that I shoved that piece of paper up him earlier.
I didn't know you did that. Now I feel bad. Just in the stomach, it's this crazy feeling thinking about it. Should we have a watching suggestion?
Yep, let's move on.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Tom?
Yeah.
What have you been watching this week?
Well, I'll kick it off with something that I watched with Shay last night.
Yes.
We got Paramount Plus because later in the month there is another Loud House movie coming out. This one is a Loud House live action movie from Nickelodeon.
This is the one that she's been.
She's very excited for this. I have seen that other Loud House movie that came out on Netflix a month ago or something. I've seen that a lot, a lot of times. So she's very excited for this new one. We got it set up and it turns out that, and I had forgotten that this was a thing, but Jojo Siwa put out a film not too long ago called The J Team and we watched that.
J is in Jojo?
Yes, The J Team. JoJo stars, as you'd expect, as a girl who is part of a dance troupe that have been together since they were very young.
Mm-hmm.
And their dance teacher retires. Oh, no. New dance teacher. Changes the star.
Oh,
no
gosh.
Nonsense.
No way.
No fun, no smiles, and definitely no bows.
What?
JoJo's whole identity is wearing her bow.
I mean, you just think about bows, you think about JoJo, and you think about Emma Wiggle.
Yep.
They're the two.
So JoJo is forced to take off her bow. She fights back against it. Do you think she stays on part of that team?
Oh, no, it's not worth her time.
Do you think she gets her own team, and that's why the film is called the J-Team?
It's way better.
Do you think she learned an important lesson about abandoning all your friends and instead maybe reuniting with the original crew as well? What lessons we learned.
That's a massive team, right? How many times have you watched it so far?
Oh, just once. Okay. We watched it last night.
Okay.
And that's enough.
Loved it. I mean, not talking about you. Shay loved it.
Loved it.
Really,
thought
really
it
good.
Was fantastic. Brilliant. Very excited to get back in again.
Yeah.
I would say it was the way I described it to Linz was this was the highest production Rebecca Black music video I've ever seen.
Okay.
And
yep.
I mean that in the nicest way possible.
No,
this is a young girl who is passionate and had a dream, and she's manifested a fucking film built around her.
Is she even 18 yet?
Yes, just 18.
Very impressive.
I think she's 18. Anyway, she has fully come out
mm-hmm.
over the last few days, and that really coloured my perception of the storyline of the film, because it was all about I've got to be true to the girl inside. It was talking about wearing
right.
the bow.
Cool.
But in reality, it pulled back. It was all about her embracing her sexuality, maturing, all of this stuff. So, yeah.
It's quite deep, actually.
It was quite deep. And there were some bits that were good fun. As I say, not aimed for me at all, but Shay had an absolute ball. So if you've got Paramount Plus and you've got a teenage or younger daughter.
Tween.
I really recommend this film because some great dancing. And JoJo is an absolute force of nature.
Oh, yeah.
That she's not going anywhere. Stop fighting it. Just get on board with that positivity and enthusiasm. It's very infectious.
Now, was she slash is she in the American version of Dancing with the Stars?
Yes. And
I
she's dancing
so.
With a lady.
Yeah.
She's the first ever same-sex pairing.
It's cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Good on you, JoJo. Anyway, let's move on. You tell us about what you've been watching.
It's not so much a watch, it's a play.
Oh.
Somebody gave me the challenge. I don't know who it could have been to play Back for Blood.
What a challenge.
What a challenge it was. So this is a zombie horde game. I think you can get it on all platforms pretty much. Well, not Switch, but, you know.
It'll be out on Switch if it's not yet.
Eventually. And in that you can play you can play co-op. There's four characters that you can choose which one you want to be. Clearly, I chose Mom because she had a shotgun and was wisecracking in the intro. I'm like, that's who I'm going to be. So
perfect.
I'm Mom. So I kept the shotgun for the majority of the playthroughs that I did. And if you don't have anyone to play with, you can still play with the bots. So the characters are still there, which is really good. It's quite long. There's a lot of acts, so each act I think has maybe four parts to it, and each part you leave a safe house and you have to travel to the next safe house.
Sure, okay.
And you come across a whole heap of different mutated zombies and whatnot. Some of them come from behind and you're like, wait, what? I'm busy killing these ones. It's harder and harder, of course, like that makes sense. Well, yeah, I really got into it, and it's one of those games that sucks your time away in that you're so invested in not dying and not having anyone in your team die that you're like, I've been playing this for over 2 hours in a row. How do I hit pause? I think it's really fun, and I think if you have a group of people, like four of you, you're going to be into it.
Good times.
I have heard, though, there's different difficulty levels, like, you know, most games, but the hard difficulty is ridiculous.
Sure. I'd never consider doing that. You just said things attack you from behind unknowingly. Yep. Nope.
You're out already?
Oh, It's a big ask, especially if there's an extreme hardcore setting on that.
Yeah, it's I think maybe if I wasn't playing with headphones, but I think if you played with headphones, you probably have a better idea that's happening.
Okay,
there's a little sort of radar thing on your screen. But you know when you're first playing it, you're like, I don't know what any of these are. I just know how to shoot.
And you're not paying attention to the radar. It's not a battleship game. I don't know why I said it that way. A battleship.
I don't know why either, but I really, really loved it. So Back for Blood, I'm going to spend, I think, some of this weekend doing it again.
Yes.
Like proper, because you need to dedicate a chunk of time to it.
I'm in the same boat with Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm loving it, but you've got to devote time to it because
it's
so story-based. It's the most narrative-driven game. There's no multiplayer. I love it.
See, I thought there was. I thought it was like co-op multiplayer.
No, you control Star-Lord and you direct the others. So it's more Final Fantasy. It's like an RPG style. And
so are you, I can't remember what it's called, turn-based? Like turn-based in your moves or not?
No, everyone's just run around. All the other four are doing their own thing.
Yeah.
But you can go, Groot, tie him up, rocket, bomb these guys.
Fun.
Yeah. So, Groot grabs people, holds them down, or you can get them to throw spikes up from the ground. Rocket will either lay down covering fire, throw grenades, or throw bombs, so it's an area effect. Drax will either charge through everyone and do stagger and knockback, or he can jump on things and punch. Gamora has the sword, so she does high damage.
Cool.
So you kind of got to go between the four of them, directing them, and then you, of course, have a few different moves itself. You have an elemental gun, so you can freeze things. Someone's got an energy shield. No one can attack him. Shoot him with the freeze gun so the shield freezes. Gamora jumps behind and can stab. This sort of stuff.
That'll teach.
It's very, very clever, but good fun.
How far into it are you?
Further than I was last time.
Great. That's great.
I don't know. I've not looked. Yeah, but I looked once and I spoiled myself on something that I thought would happen 25 minutes in, but it took me 4 hours to get to.
Yeah, okay.
So I don't want to see anything further down and stuff because I could tell there's some big stuff coming already.
Yeah, totally fair. Yeah. Totally fair.
Hey, tell me.
Yes.
Have you caught up on what we do in the shadows?
I have, but I haven't watched the very last episode, but it's spoiled for me, so I know what happens.
Okay. So you saw episode 9. You saw that ending I wanted to discuss last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a very full-on head tap.
Yeah, because last week, I don't know if – I think it might have been after the podcast. I don't think it was actually recorded. But you were like, this season of What We Do in the Shadows, it's really changing.
Yeah. It's not frivolous
everything.
Little throwaway apps. It's, they're creating a full narrative and expanding the world, and it's serialized. And so you haven't seen it the last episode. I won't give things away, but it leaves every character in a very different position for next season.
I think one of the things I noticed the most about this season, apart from the massive things that have happened, you can tell the production value. It's
so
gone
up.
There's a fair bit of CGI stuff that doesn't even need to be in there, but is. And I laugh every time. Every time there's a bit of CGI work there, it's for a gag.
Yep.
And it makes me laugh.
Enhances stuff. I'm really looking forward to going back and rewatching this season, because specifically anything to do with Laszlo.
Yes.
They've been seeding that all season.
Yep.
And they tip their hat. In the last episode, they show you a little bit of it. But thinking back on things, there's so much that with this different context
like
that we've
even
got stuff
the
now.
The date?
Yep, the date. Or knocking around trying to fix that car.
Yep. My favorite Laszlo thing was the harmonica. When he swallows the harmonica and then for the rest of that, that scene, every time he speaks, it's just a harmonica sound comes along with it. It's very funny. Whoever came up with that joke, if that was me, I'd be like, I'm super proud of that. That's the bit that I'm most proud of. I think this, like I said, I still got to watch the last episode, but I know what happened. I think I need to not just watch this season, but maybe watch the second season as well. Because the second season, remember, we also had some things that were happening there as well.
Look, Guimero's storyline is really paying off after a couple of years now. Collins got brought to the forefront this season.
Yeah.
Laszlo weirdly stepped back.
Yeah.
But it looks Yep. No, it doesn't look like next season he's going to be the main character, I think.
Yep, I think so.
So, yeah, it's cool shifting around of priorities on that show. I love it so much. They're already well deep in production on season four.
Fantastic. And this, I think, is what is going to give them longevity, because I think that the idea of what we do in the Shadows TV show probably had three seasons of solid episodes, right, that we would look back on and go, that was a brilliant three seasons. But to do what they're doing has just suddenly gone, oh, people are going to be interested in this for maybe 6 to 7 if they continue like this. Yeah.
They started out in the British comedy mold of a few episodes done really high production value, very tight, we don't spoil. Yep. And instead they discovered that the expanded world is what people actually want from that show, and that's where it keeps going. And there's just so much more.
So broad. Good. Yeah. It's a comedy that I am so glad exists, and I'm so happy whenever I get to watch it. I'm like, I don't want any distractions. This is me. This is me for the next, I think they're a bit over half hour.
Yeah.
This is me for the duration. Look, just this is not a proper watching suggestion because you've already done it, but I managed to catch up with Free Guy.
Nice.
That is a fun movie.
I told you it was a lot of fun.
Taika Waititi, this is what made me think about it, obviously, what we do in the Shadows. Taika Waititi is brilliant. He's so good in it. He is exactly – he's like the most realistic character in there, because there are people – that are like that.
Yep.
It's so fun. Disney Plus.
Yeah, Disney Plus.
In the Star section.
Free.
Yeah.
Get it up, yeah.
I didn't even know it was on there, you see. That was a quiet addition.
Yes. I think it's because it came out on there the same day as Blu-ray and all that sort of stuff, and they didn't want to, you know, go buy.
Tom, this is a highly researched quiz, just because I wanted to make sure that the answers were correct. I'm going to call this quiz Actors as Directors, True or False?
Ooh.
So, as we know, actors.
Okay.
Like Jason Priestley, for example, directed quite a few Beverly Hills 90210 episodes, that kind of thing.
This is not someone who was an actor and then is now known primarily as a director.
No.
Can we call this?
I am an actor in this TV show and I'm directing an episode or two.
Dabbling in directing.
Oh, that's good.
I gotcha.
Really good.
Okay,
that's it.
Now.
That's really nice.
Now. That's when Kristen Bell's like, look, it's season 3 of Good Place. It's my turn.
Well.
I hope I didn't just.
No, you did. You did, but technically it was season 4, episode 8. But that was the first one. All right.
I'm sorry that I did that to you.
That's fine.
As soon as that came out, I'm like, I'm going to do it again. I do this, listeners. I do this.
Because you knew that I was going to pick a good place.
I didn't. I didn't know you were going to. That's it's just amazing. That's a good example.
That's really good. Well, there you go.
All right.
Correct.
So I got question 1 correct. Tick.
She did Funeral to End All Funerals. That was her episode. What about David Tennant for Doctor Who? Back when he was in.
Oh.
He was the 10th Doctor. Yeah. I don't know why we speak about him so much. I think because when I think about the Doctor, I think about him.
David Tennant is a big fixture. He's Scrooge McDuck.
Mm.
He's in the Loud House movie.
Is he?
Yeah, he's the Scottish groundkeeper of the Loud's ancestral home.
Did he wear a kilt?
Yeah.
Great.
He talks very Scottish. I'm going to say no. I don't think Tennant was allowed to direct Doctor Who. I can't think of any time that they were, like, Peter Capaldi wouldn't have been allowed to direct, and he is an Oscar-winning director.
I looked it up, and I couldn't see any of the Doctor's names. Well, sorry, the actors' names as the director. So yeah,
good one. You had me there. I had to really dig through.
You're having a little bit of a think. We spoke about this show earlier. What about Pedro Pascal for The Mandalorian?
No, I don't think.
You're correct. And the reason why we know that that's not the case is because they do behind-the-scenes documentary series about it, and he's not one of them.
And, no, diss on him, they get really fucking big names to come and direct – episodes of their Star Wars TV show.
Yep.
You're not going to phone one out to Pedro Pascal. Like, Pedro, it's great. Robert Rodriguez is free for another week, so we're cool.
That's right. There's not enough episodes in The Mandalorian for them to allow the main actor to direct one. Yeah. What about David Schwimmer in Friends? I mean, they were so many episodes.
Schwimmer for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. He directed quite a few. He started in season 6, and by season 10 he was still – oh, he only did one in season 10. But he also went on to direct some of the episodes of Joey.
Yep.
And
I have a soft spot for that show. It's trash, but I own it.
I've only seen a few episodes.
I own the entire season on a Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah?
On a DVD.
Wait,
yeah.
There was only one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all I deserve.
Okay, fair enough. He also directed 6 episodes, might have been all of them actually, of the Little Britain US.
Yep.
Yeah.
Schwimmer's got a hand in a lot of stuff. People dissed him for a long time. I didn't think it was
warranted. No, he diversified. Yeah.
And he went and paired up with Simon Pegg to crack the English market and stuff. And
yeah.
He did a British intelligence show over there a couple of years ago. It was basically Ted Lasso, but him in charge of an English version of a CIA.
Sort of like John Hamm.
Yeah.
In that he is like, I'm going to go and do a lot over there too. Yeah. What about Ricky Gervais in The Office?
Mm.
Only 2 seasons of that, but
sure.
He was a creator.
I don't think he did direct.
Well, I looked up IMDb.
Yes.
And technically each episode is directed by Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais.
Okay.
So I think what it is that Stephen Merchant is directing it, but Ricky comes along and goes, I've got a great idea. We'll do this.
I'm sure their partnership also dictates that both names go on.
Yeah.
I reckon they've got something in a contract somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Final one.
Oh, I like that.
Gosh, everybody, we've almost spoken about every single person so far. Norman Reedus for The Walking Dead. There's a lot of episodes. Has he directed one?
I don't think he has.
He hasn't.
Stand over there and say louder.
That's right. No, Andrew Lincoln I don't think did either. I scanned through the list of directors.
Sure.
Of course, Nick is there all the time.
Yep.
Because, but it's quite a long list, but there are a lot of episodes. A lot of episodes of that show.
And I don't know what Norman had put his hand up for saying I want to direct that. He's already got his passion project.
That's exactly what it is.
He gets to drive around on his motorbike. He doesn't want to stress about.
I wonder if it would have been an episode where he and Carol were on bikes. I mean, it is not a thing, but so I don't know why.
I get the sense from him that that's an extra responsibility he's not interested in.
Yeah.
He likes the bike show because it's him riding the bike. There's other people making the choices.
Just follow me.
In the van. I think that's what he gets. So I don't see him. I don't know. I don't.
He's not a director. Yeah. Well done.
Thanks. That was a really good quiz.
The research
was well warranted.
Sometimes it pays off.
Does.
Sometimes it really does. All right, so we will be back next week for the podcast. No quiz this week, so don't get excited. Sometimes I don't know about you, but sometimes I get messages saying, oh, I'm going to catch the quiz this week. I'm like, oh, about that, it's not on.
Put my phone on silent.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's very clever. And I've enjoyed all of the photographs of the prizes that people have sent in.
They've been good, haven't they?
Very funny ones.
Coming. Enjoy those.
The Nicolas Cage bath mat's probably the most ridiculous one.
It's haunting.
It really is. That's a perfect way of saying it. Not even Halloween anymore. Tom, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. And on that note.
Wow!